Interview with Artie McKesson Logan about the seven mothers. Pick up your voice better than mine if need be. So, Artie, if you will, just kind of start off by telling me how you fit into this story. What's your position within the story of the seven mothers?
Well, I happen to be one of the, a friend of their children, okay. All of their children. And we played together in the neighborhood, and we were kind of used as sort of models to break some barriers.
Okay.
Certain things, for instance, we were groomed by these mothers to go to places like the recreation center and to see if we could gain access.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We were told how to behave and to be polite and how to accept rejection without any rebuttal, which we did. They purchased brand new tennis shoes for us so that they wouldn't say that we were bringing dirt and sand and things in there, because they had just recently refurbished the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So we wore our shoes and we went there and we were denied. Well, they said because the floor was being refurbished.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there were other Caucasian children that were playing on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So we accepted that and came back home, and we told the mothers what had happened. And they said, okay, wash the bottoms of your tennis shoes the next time, tie the strings together and throw them over your shoulders,
mm-hmm.
so that you won't track any dirt or any sand or any grit in there.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that, and we were met by the director of the recreation center that said, we prefer for you to go to another place to play. And I said, why? They said, because this is not for you all. So shortly after that, they did build the Mountain View Recreation Center.
Mm-hmm.
But these children, we were used in those areas sort of as a model to try to break through the barrier.
Mm-hmm.
But we got a lot of prompting and priming from these mothers. These mothers were Miss Willette Chambers. She was born in 1931. She passed in 2007. Mrs. Ruth Forney, born in 1926. She passed in 1994. Mrs. Annie J. Hicks, she was born in 1923, and she passed in 1979. Ms. Rosalie Johnson, born in 1929. She passed in 2002. Ms. Mildred Largent was born in 1930 and passed in 1997. Miss Lucille Rutherford, I don't have the dates of her birth,
okay.
or the date of her passing, but she has passed since then.
Okay.
And the last one was Ms. Laura Thomas, and I don't have her dates either, but
okay.
These two ladies have died within the last 8 years.
Okay.
Seven,
she
to 8 years.
Pull up an obituary.
Yes.
Okay. And what was the time frame, Artie? What kind of years were we looking at when you all were going to the gym and trying to play?
This was back in probably 1960. Probably 1960.
Okay.
1960, 61, something like that.
Okay.
Because we weren't quite in high school.
Okay.
And before we go on, I'll start back from a person that was very instrumental in starting the group of the seven women, and that was Reverend W.F. McIntosh.
Okay.
He allowed them to have secret meetings in his basement. They first started out by receiving old books that we received from the from the white schools, and they would repair them, glue, tape, and whatever, and try to make them look decent. Another thing they did, they started repairing the old worn-out high school band suits that we were given, that were handed down from the white schools. And they would sew them and repair them and refurbish them so that we would be able to wear them. So that's when it really started out. McIntosh was very instrumental, but he had to be a silent negotiator or a silent kind of like the general of the army. He worked very silently because he had to stay in a position where he could help us and not bring to light that he was a part of it, because he was in the educational system. He was one of a few that remained in the educational system.
Now tell me a little bit about that. When desegregation came, then it sounds like a lot of the blacks who had been previously teaching were let go. How did he end up remaining in the system?
Well, you know, I don't like to use the word token, but I felt like there were a few that were tokens that were kept back so that we wouldn't make such a fuss about it. Reverend McIntosh, who was an outstanding coach, of course, he had skills that they could carry over to Morganton High School.
Right.
And so that was a very significant role that he had, and I felt like they wanted to continue with that and his expertise in coaching. We had Ms. Effie Williams, who remained. And, of course, she looked to be Caucasian. She looked to be Caucasian. And there was another one that was kept, and she had a lighter complexion. So in my mind, I don't know how they were thinking, but in my mind, they kept the ones that were of lighter complexion. They kept Mrs. Isola Fleming. They kept Miss Frankie Carson. All these people were extremely, could pass for white. Most of them could pass for white. So those were a few of them that they kept. But even before that year, the integration in 1965 is when we actually, 65-66, the year of, 65. It's when the last class graduated from Olive Hill. And that following fall of 65, we went to Morganton High School. Now let me back up a little bit, because this is very significant, and a lot of people don't know this, and I did bring it to their attention, and this hasn't been a part of history, but I did what they call the transition when I spoke. We'll go back even further than that. In the school year of 1963-64, some of these children of these seven women really broke down the barrier then, because they entered into Morganton High School as eighth grade students. Morganton Junior High School is eighth grade students. And those names were Florence Avery, who was the daughter of Ms. Janie Avery, who was...
Now tell me what school they entered again.
Morganton Junior High. Florence Avery, now her mother wasn't one of the seven, but she was one of those that was quite an advocate and worked in the background. In my feeling, because of her position that she was working, she couldn't be that outspoken, because some of these women were dismissed from their jobs. And I'll talk a little bit about that. So the year of 63-64, Florence Avery, Barbara Roseborough, Charles Forney. Now, his mother was Miss Ruth Forney.
Okay.
And she was one of the...
Seven.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Richard Johnson.
Okay.
He was a son of one of the mothers, Miss Lucille Johnson. And then there was another child by the name of Jo Lynn Clark. Now, mind you, all these mothers, most of these mothers lived over in the Jonesboro area.
Okay.
Over near.
Tell me how to spell Jo Lynn. Is it like two words?
Well, I spelled it J-O-E. Let's just put Jo Clark.
Jo Clark. Okay.
But they weren't very well received.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason the parents transferred them there because they felt like it was ridiculous for them to bypass the neighborhood school and travel to a further distance to attend mm-hmm. a school. Now, they had to go to a school that was Olive Hill,
mm-hmm.
and they
mm-hmm.
just lived within, you know, a few hundred yards. And for them to track all the way across town and go to Mountain View School, they felt mm-hmm. it was ridiculous.
Okay, so they were close.
And they did go over and they did complete the eighth grade, but the children were just miserable and they were received with a lot of rejection and discrimination. So they returned to the ninth grade at Olive Hill High School, which was within their neighborhood.
Okay.
They could walk to school in 3 to 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas it would take a good 20, 25 minutes to walk across town to Mountain View.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another significant situation. But first, before it was officially integrated by the majority, we had three students. Eugene Thomas, he was a son of one of the mothers. Lorraine Johnson, who was a daughter of one of the mothers, mm-hmm. and Patricia Toms. They became the first African-American students to graduate from Morganton High School in the class of 1965, which was a year before we did the integration.
Okay. 1965.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So these mothers were pretty much willing to risk their children
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
use as, for lack of a better word, a guinea pig
mm-hmm.
to see how things would turn out.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt like they were just such unselfish and such brave women
mm-hmm.
to put their own children's safety on the line. I don't think there was ever a threat or a feeling that they would be harmed significantly or
mm-hmm.
killed.
Mm-hmm.
But they did put them on the line for them to experience emotional abuse and rejection.
Have you read a thesis by Michael Irvin that
yes.
makes reference to...
Yes, I helped him with that.
Okay, good, good. Are there any pieces in that, because I'm referring back to that too, are there any pieces in that that need to be added to or, you know, explained any further, anything you wish you could have gotten into that paper?
It's been so long ago.
Yeah.
He was a student at in Asheville,
mm-hmm.
UNCA, and he and McIntosh and I helped him with that. Not that I can think of.
Okay.
Do you have any questions about any of that? That was I haven't read it in quite
right.
a while.
It's been a little while since I read it too, and I think he did a pretty good, you know, job of pushing back against the biases that you tend to hear.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when stories are being told about black folks in Burke County, because what I get a lot is that they want to stop just short of the difficult conversations. You know, they don't want to, they kind of want to pull back when it gets uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know if there were, at the time, were there any newspaper articles or was anything written about what was going on in the local newspapers?
No, I don't, but there is one thing that comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
We were not allowed to attend the junior senior prom. And the way they got around that was that they had rented a venue, which is the Morganton Country Club,
mm-hmm.
Mimosa Country Club.
Mm-hmm.
And there were personal invitations. It was only by invitation. And none of the black students got the invitation. And we weren't told until a few weeks before that the school would not be having a prom.
Wow.
And I must say, I'm very appreciative. We had a prom, but it was Johnny Smith,
mm-hmm.
who was the director of Mountain View, heard about it,
mm-hmm.
and he went out and he brought drinks and popcorn and snacks for us, and so we were able to dress up and go to a little prom at the recreation center, Mountain
View.
That
was at the Mountain View.
But there were some very accepting, some of the white kids were very accepting. As a matter of fact, about 10 or 15, after they left their prom at Mimosa Country Club, they came down and joined us.
Wow, okay.
In other parts of the county, the transition was a little smoother in some areas. My understanding from those who attended Drexel, it didn't seem to be much of a problem at all.
Okay.
That they could not identify any specific problems that were very insulting to them. But, of
mm-hmm.
course, there were some children that were standoffish, some of the white children.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding in Glen Alpine, those who joined the band like Vera, Lytle, and... I can't remember his name. They were more accepted.
Okay.
They were more accepted. But there was a trip that they went on. The band was competing, and they went on a trip. And when they got to a restaurant, and the children were going in to be fed, or the students were going in to be fed, they were told, these two or three cannot come in to be fed. So... what the instructor, the teachers did, and the other students, the white students, were very upset.
Mm-hmm.
So they refused to eat there and went to another restaurant.
Okay.
There was some acceptance and there was some rejection. My personal experience in Morganton kind of 50-50. I will point this out, if you were a good student and came in with good grades,
mm-hmm.
You didn't tend to have much of a problem.
Okay.
We felt like complexion played a part in that, because those students that were of lighter complexion, we felt like there was more acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
More acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And I will say that there were teachers that just really welcomed some of us with open arms. Ms. Hester and Ms. Kidd were two that just really went out of their way to make us feel comfortable.
And they were white.
They were white.
Okay.
When I went to, we didn't have any black instructors.
Wow.
At Morganton High School.
Okay.
I think McIntosh was assistant coach.
Okay.
And we also found out that those students that who sung in the choir or played a sport was much more accepted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So if you were in good academic standing, your skin was lighter, you played a sport, or you were in the choir. It was almost like I felt they looked like they were looking for attributes that would help the school, put the school on the map, like the good athletic talents from some of the students.
Right.
Those students didn't seem to have any problems. Mm-hmm. And we were instructed by our parents to kindly stay out of the limelight.
Mm-hmm.
Don't make a fuss. You know, be there, be silent, but try to not be so visible. Mm-hmm. And by that they meant, you know, you follow the rules. You know, you don't go in loud and boisterous. And they made sure, of course, we were dressed appropriately. Of course, we had come from a background where you couldn't wear jeans or anything like that.
And the boys wear dresses, girls did still do.
We had to wear dresses.
Yeah.
If you wore pants, you had to wear a dress over your pants.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the guys had to wear a shirt and tie.
Wow.
Dress down day was on Friday.
Wow.
When they didn't have to wear a tie.
Now, did the white kids wear ties?
No.
Wow.
No. We were the best dressed students in school, and it wasn't something that we specifically did,
mm-hmm.
because that's what we were accustomed to.
Mm-hmm.
We were trained to do that.
Mm-hmm. So not only the seven mothers, but just mothers in the community, period. Parents
mothers
in the community.
Mothers in the community, period.
Knew how to coach the kids.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And I'll have to say there were fathers. Slay's Chapel, we like to call that the cradle or the area of where it all began.
Mm-hmm.
Because they would have secret meetings in the basement of the church,
mm-hmm.
under the direction of a Reverend Dr. J.L. Hunt, who was also the pastor there.
Okay.
Okay.
I remember Reverend Hunt.
Yeah. And so there were people like your father-in-law, George Nelson.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want these guys to want it to be known. George Nelson, McKesson, Davy Chris, who was the mortician, and
Davy,
they call him Davy.
Davy, okay.
And I don't know his real name.
Okay,
I guess that may be it. Felix Britton.
Okay,
these men played a very big role. Ed O'Neill, Arthrow Perkins. Perkins.
Okay.
What was Bub Tate's name? Harry Tate. That's Greta Tate's dad.
Okay.
They were our backup. Because when we were being used as models to go into these situations, they were around the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And don't put this down, but they were armed.
Ah, okay.
One time we got a message from Dave Rader, who was a taxi driver and was black people had to use the taxi a lot. And he overheard a conversation from a group of whites, and he let us know that they said they were going to get some of the nicest little black girls in the community, and the word was used, messed up. So they felt like that was a threat to rape.
Right.
So these men, during the night, would ride the streets, mm-hmm. with their shotguns and protect the black neighborhoods.
Wow.
When we got out of school, some of them would be sitting in their cars waiting, mm-hmm. to make sure that we weren't being abducted.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The men could not come out,
mm-hmm.
and that's that old stigma that we've had for years.
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
the black man's going to be much more of a threat and going to get punished much more.
Yeah,
the black female could extend herself, mm-hmm. a little bit further,
mm-hmm.
a little bit further.
Yeah,
But there was one black female that was a strong advocate, and she was penalized, and her name was Miss Mildred Largent.
Mm-hmm.
She became the NAACP president, and she also worked for the Morganton Housing Authority.
Mm-hmm.
So when Mayor Andrew Kissler found out that she was involved with the movement,
mm-hmm.
he fired her. She was his maid
wow.
and cook, so he did fire her. But it didn't stop her. She kept on.
Yeah.
But these mothers, even after some of us graduated from high school, they were very vigilant. They continued to watch over the affairs of the students that were being integrated in
mm-hmm.
the school system.
Mm-hmm.
And now, so this active kind of patrolling almost that they had to do, how long did that last? How long did they have to kind of stay on the down low, watching from a distance just to make sure that nobody did anything to hurt y'all?
I don't know if they ever really stopped anytime
wow.
soon.
Yeah.
I think it went on even when I went off to college.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there were still people that were
keeping
a watch.
Yeah.
I don't know to what extent,
mm-hmm.
but I do know that things were being reported back and we were getting information and of threats
mm-hmm.
that were being made,
mm-hmm.
but they never really carried through those threats.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. But you know, we were quite upset. We didn't want to. We didn't want to leave the schools.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to leave the black schools.
Didn't leave the black schools.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me a little bit about that.
I've got this here in writing. That should have—I forgot I had it in writing. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I talked about the biggest problem surfacing around prom time. Oak Hills prom actually turned out to be more of a dinner in a cafeteria.
Okay.
So they still had one, but was poorly attended by the Caucasian students and the black students.
Okay.
Okay, there was a cross burn in the yard that night.
Wow. Whose yard? The night of the prom?
Yes. There was a cross burn in the yard that night, and someone called Dale Fleming and advised that they not attend the prom. However, they went on without a significant incident. I'm not sure whose yard it was burned in.
Okay.
And McIntosh knew about that. I don't know if it's his. Glen Alpine didn't experience significant problems. That person was Vera Lionel Bryant and Elias Bryant.
Their
prom went well.
Okay.
They only had the problem with when they went out of town
okay.
and going to the restaurant. Drexel High School, Mildred Berry Hawkins said that their prom went very well.
Okay.
They didn't have any problems.
Okay.
And of course, we talked about the exclusion in Morganton.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are you aware of discrimination in any areas like you said, like, if they were really good at music or really good at sports, they were kind of elevated and uplifted. What about areas like cheerleading? Like, I've talked to Beverly Carlton, and she shared her experience as someone who wanted to be a cheerleader and who was denied that. I got to get the full story of it from her, but her body type was ridiculed, I guess, and she felt that she was discriminated against in her efforts to be a cheerleader.